When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
This is Danny and Dusty.
Meringutang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All throws with monkey sounds in there and called good.
The old Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Good afternoon. Hey, welcome in. Happy Friday, Danny and Dusty with you. Crack-a-lackin', everybody.
Sweet, sweet Friday.
It is great. It is great. We got a Friday opening day for the Hillsboro Hops today.
Hey.
Yeah, love it. Love having an opening day.
It's a solid opening day.
Weather's got, it is perfect for this.
It was cold last night, man.
It is cold this morning.
It was frosty.
For people that wake up in the morning.
37 degrees.
Yeah, people wake up in the morning.
I was probably up before you this morning.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What time did you wake up?
6.
No, you weren't.
What the hell are you doing up for 6?
Exercising.
Oh, God.
That's why I'm up about 7.
Yeah.
I am not.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's early for you. What time did you go to bed? For you, that's like 3 hours of sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I went to bed about 1:30 last night.
All right.
So a little bit earlier than usual. But
all right.
I got home almost just before 10, I think, last night.
Okay.
So, all right, yeah, because
the Blazers played in Canada.
God, I love East Coast trips. Getting home before 1 o'clock in the morning is just so nice.
Yeah.
It's the simple things in life.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Great part about living on the West Coast, man. Get them early games. They don't live that life on the East Coast. They don't know that.
No.
The early games are when they play in London.
Yeah. They have late and later. That's... Yeah. West Coast, best coast for sports, man. It's undefeated.
I agree. We've got the market cornered here.
We wake up at 9 in the morning and watch football.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
See,
10 a.m.
On the other side of the coin, though, there is part of me, and this is the old bartender in me that would be, you know, working until 2, 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
I feel like as an East Coaster, it'd be kind of nice to have, you know, some NBA games on until 1 a.m.
Yeah, but also,
yeah,
you know, yeah.
It's a very niche group, I guess, though, you know?
It is, but that's like most people, you got to go to work, right? Like, this is the thing about, like, we talk about the East Coast bias, and the complaint about, like, late college football kickoffs for fans out here, they're like, bah, you get home too late. It's like... let's not argue about that.
Yeah.
Because like if you're complaining about a 7:30 kick, right, out west, primetime games on the East Coast start at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
There's an 8 p.m. kick.
It's very dumb.
And if you want to say that like, oh, well, you know, they don't have to drive as far. They live close to their stadiums or whatever. That's not true either.
No.
Because
college football stadiums are out in the middle of nowhere.
I'm here to tell you. Not everybody lives in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. No. Not everybody lives in Knoxville, Tennessee that goes to those games.
In fact,
they come from a long ways.
A long ways away, more often than not.
So, but the complaint should be that those late kicks don't get eyes on the East Coast of your team.
Yes.
And so your product suffers because you don't get the respect because nobody out there watches it. Nobody cares about it either.
No, you get the people like... It's funny when you talk about like... there's like this international swath of Blazers fans.
Mm.
And there's pockets in Australia. There's pockets in Japan. There's pockets in all over Europe. And then depending on what... And the Blazers have... You know the Blazers have more international players than any team in the league?
That makes sense
they
because...
Have 9.
Well, and it's like kind of a fake 9, though, because Delano Banton and Shaedon Sharpe are Canadian, right? And then also... Technically, Toumani Camara is Belgian.
Well, I mean,
he
was raised in Belgium. He went to his senior year out here in Florida.
He'd been senior year, so he went to a year in high school and then went to two colleges out here. So he's been two colleges.
Yeah. But he's you know? I mean, he's still
Belgian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Danny is, you know, Israeli.
Israeli. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Trying to think who DA is.
He's from the Bahamas.
Bahamas, yep.
You got Matisse.
Matisse.
Matisse Thybul.
Yep. Australian.
Wait. But he was born and raised in Seattle, right?
I think he was.
I thought he was born.
I think he went to high
Seattle.
School there, but he was. I think he was born in Australia.
Well, yeah, born. But that's kind of a fake one because you go to high school out here.
WAP, South Sudan, and Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
And very internationally traveled.
Repair.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. France. Yeah.
and actually, now Sidi, Sissoko.
Oh, hey, look at that.
Also French.
Mm. And then Donovan Klingon, who's from a different planet altogether. Basically. Like, he is just a mutant.
He's a Klingon?
Yeah. He's from outer space, Star Trek. Very international flair. But who saw that coming when you hired Mike Schmitz to your front office?
The guy who cut his teeth. International scouting.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so surprised.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you're going to say anything about the front office, I mean, at least they're leaning into their strengths.
Yep, that is true.
So
that is true. Yeah, Blazers, most international team in the NBA. Mm-hmm. That used to be the San Antonio Spurs, like every year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was just it. Granted, that was back when there weren't a lot of international players, and they had like
Duncan
four.
Virgin Islands, Manu from Argentina, Parker from France. DL from France.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think, Thiago Splitter was he Brazil? Trying to think who else they had over the years that was awesome. Barbosa was Phoenix.
Now, technically, if they have a predominantly American roster, wouldn't the most international team in the league be the Toronto Raptors?
Yeah, that would be true. But you also have Steve Kerr played on those Spurs teams, too. Remember that? He was born in Lebanon, if we want to go.
Oh, yeah, technically. Yeah.
If you want to go with the fake international.
Because his father was, what, like an ambassador?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Patty Mills on that team, Australia.
Ballsy baller.
Yeah.
What are they? Are they the Boomers? Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, Boomer.
Corey Joseph was on those early teams. He's Canadian.
I did not know that about Corey Joseph.
Yeah. Gojo? Yeah, he's Canadian.
Huh. All right. I saw somebody put out a tweet. Because Tim Duncan's got dreads now.
Oh, he's glorious.
He's leaned into the Rasta.
Yeah, he has.
But somebody tweeted out, like, what's going on? What's the deal with Tim Duncan? It's like, dude, he's living his best life. That's what. Like, who cares? He looks glorious. I never knew Tim Duncan had that kind of flow. He could, the potential of that flow. I wish Tim Duncan would have had that when he played. Instead, he played like the most boring player in the NBA, and he had the most boring haircut of anybody in the NBA. If Tim Duncan would have had that hair and like put it like back and had like a little headband,
the bandana,
his game would have looked way more cool.
Oh, yeah.
It would have like
just dreads flowing every time he hits a bank shot.
When people would have said Tim Duncan's game's boring, it'd be like, no, it's not. No. Look at that hair. Yeah. But he looked boring because of his haircut.
The Nene Hilario effect.
Mm.
Remember Nene with the Nuggets?
I remember Nene, yeah.
Remember he had the big dreads, he cut them off?
Yeah, and then he came back down to earth.
Testicular cancer, I think, if I'm right.
I don't know.
Well, I remember he lost one because, there's a joke about him being the wrecking ball.
Yeah. Well, I love Tim Duncan's new look. I think it is...
oh, it's great.
It's a phenomenal
fashion
look.
Icon.
And I had no idea. I'm assuming that this picture that I retweeted it a couple of days ago. I'm assuming the picture is with his wife that's there. And I'm starting to see that there is a trend with the type of women that era of the San Antonio Spurs dated and married.
Yes.
She has a very Eva Longoria look, who was married to Tony Parker. Right? It is... She's a hot.
Yeah.
And good for Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, God bless you, Tim Duncan. You're doing well, my man. So let's not hate on Tim Duncan's gray dreads where he looks like, he takes a lot of bong rips. Maybe that's what it was. He just didn't want people to know. He didn't want people to know that he's kind of a stoner.
I mean,
who'd have saw it coming? You know? Wake Forest.
It happens.
He cultivated the perfect boring image.
Yeah, it's called Leave Me Alone.
Yeah.
Maybe John Morant should consider that.
I don't think he's capable of that.
No, I don't think so either. Total derail moment.
Sure.
But we had this conversation watching the game last night. What is your favorite revenge movie? This all started because the revenge movie.
Okay.
Have you seen the previews of that movie, The Amateur, Rami Malek?
No.
It revenge movie.
Don't watch commercials. Remember, we went over this the other day.
But
unless it's a progressive dad commercial, I've just tuned out to all of them.
I didn't realize it, but I love revenge movies.
Okay.
Like, love them. Like, there's some of my...
So you're like a big Taken fan?
John Wick. Yeah. Man on Fire. Denzel. Okay. Like, but the amateur, he's a CIA. Yeah. He's a CIA analyst, and a group of people end up, like, kidnapping and killing his wife. It's horrible, right?
Okay.
But he's not a field guy, and so he invents, like, very, very heinous and crazy ways to kill them all.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm in for this.
Favorite revenge movie, Dirty Work.
Rest in peace, Norm.
If you've seen that movie,
that's
a revenge movie.
It is.
Not the kind you're talking about.
No.
You're talking to, like, action thriller. Dirty Work is...
That is a bold submission. I like it.
Well, we
got
saw the,
my nose bitten off. By...
We saw the poster for Nobody 2 the other day.
Oh, yeah.
One, yeah. Or the old, you had Charles Bronson in Death Wish.
Yeah.
And then a few years ago, Bruce Willis remade it.
Well, I know, you know, Bruce Willis, Die Hard fit into that?
I'm not sure that's revenge.
He's doing it for his family.
It's revenge adjacent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because at least, I guess, like, once you get into the Die Hard with a Vengeance, that's a revenge movie, but
quite literally
the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Law-abiding citizen might
John
be my
Wick,
favorite.
John Wick, which, by the way, John Wick 5 coming.
Yeah. Which,
yeah. Don't know how they're going to pull out of that one.
Yeah,
it seemed like they really wrapped that up in 4.
Is that different than The Ballerina, or is that the John Wick 5?
I don't know. John Wick 5. All I saw was John Wick 5.
Huh. Because The Ballerina, I think, is at least in the John Wick, you know,
universe. Yeah. I will go John Wick, because you got so many layers of the revenge. It's not just his family. It's his dog. You know?
Yeah. Well,
Well,
it's just hours of Keanu kicking ass.
Yes.
Yeah.
But also,
yeah.
Do you guys know it actually comes from the smallest kernel of truth? The John Wick, like what the original was written based on? Nothing?
No.
Do you remember Marcus Luttrell? Lone Survivor?
Oh, yeah.
So it's...
Okay, yeah. I've seen
that. Cartel shot his dog.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on like a maniac spree chasing them down.
Yeah.
Marcus Luttrell, been through it.
I would say so.
Been through it.
I would say so. That's really stretching the based on a true story. Inspired by true events.
There you go.
Yeah, inspired by true events.
Which basically that means this may or may not have happened.
Yeah.
At any point in history.
Yeah. Mostly not, but we're going to Hollywood this thing up just a little bit. Major League revenge movie?
Oh, you know what? Yeah.
They win the whole damn thing because of the owner.
Yeah.
Huh?
I'm liking the outside the box submissions here.
Thank you. I've got
Little Giants?
Little Giants revenge is a revenge movie.
Wouldn't be on the team?
Icebox couldn't play.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. And Icebox was the damn best player in that tryout.
What was the name of that play? The Annexation of
Puerto Rico.
There we go. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Wick 5 confirmed, which also confirms that John Wick is not dead. Spoiler.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, because the whole thing collapsed in 4. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole syndicate.
Well, no, I mean, not necessarily. The table still reigns, but the... What was Skarsgård's character? He was like the fixer or whatever.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Well, yeah.
See, I'm going to be a little disappointed if they start going all, you know, Mike Myers or Jason Voorhees here, and you think they keep killing him, but he keeps coming back.
Yeah, that's pretty... Oh, hey, how about this submission on the fan text line? Revenge of the Nerds.
Quite literally, revenge.
It is a revenge movie. Yeah,
I like it.
You Tiger Bomb in the jockstrap.
Yeah. I like it. Not the Tiger Bomb, but I like the submission.
Yeah. Boy, that movie, Revenge of the Nerds, You want to talk about some problematic things?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
breaking God. Into the sorority and putting up cameras?
Yeah.
Yikes, dog. Yeah.
Not getting away with that movie today.
Hey, that's funny. Now you're like, oh, no, that's criminal.
Now y'all are going to prison.
I don't think we're getting any Porky's either.
You know, no. I remember watching Porky's when I was like 11 years old.
I was younger than that. I snuck down so my parents had rented it.
No, I probably was younger than that.
I think I was like 6 or 7 and hiding behind the couch watching it. They didn't know I was down there.
That explains a lot, man.
Right?
Yeah, that explains a lot. Yeah. Congrats about that, man. Yeah. But Revenge of the Nerds, I can't wait. Have you ever seen, well, I know you guys have probably seen these, people will do, they'll put like dramatic music behind, you know, loving films or television shows and make them look like they are the good guys, the bad guy. Like they've done this with, the first person, like where it was popularized was How I Met Your Mother, Barney Stinson, Neil Patrick Harris's character. Yeah. He goes with Cobra Kai, or like, Karate Kid is the bad guy, you know? He's like, no, Cobra Kai's a good guy.
Yeah.
You know? And he has, like, this whole spiel as to why they are actually the good guys. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to do that with Revenge of the Nerds, which is, hey, the Alpha Beta is new. These guys were sick. They were twisted.
Ooh.
And they were criminals. These guys are perverts.
Peeping Toms.
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh, I like this. Coming at it from a different angle.
Yeah. You know, you just spin it.
You better get some IP trademark on that.
Yeah.
Some algorithm's going to grab it. It's going to end up on some desk at Sony. God.
All right.
Here's one from the text line. My favorite revenge film. Kim Kardashian getting back at Nick Cannon with Ray J.
No. If you have you ever seen the
That's a comeback
outtakes?
Story.
Yeah, the outtakes of Parks and Rec. Chris Pratt. It was a... It's an outtake of, they ask, like, everybody loves a good, I'm not even going to say it. Just go look it up. Just go look it up.
What is
Chris,
her name?
Chris, Pat, what Chris
is,
Pratt,
what is her name?
Parks and Rec.
From that show, Rashida Jones loses it, but.
Amy Poehler?
No. Nicole Albrecht's twin.
Oh, Aubrey Plaza.
Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah.
The second Chris Pratt says it, she slaps him.
Yeah.
And it's so great.
Yeah. And everybody's just dead.
Yeah. Ron Swanson's character loses it. I mean, just
there's it's about a 2-minute cut up of just Chris Pratt ad-libbing in that show that is
unreal.
Breaks the entire cast.
Yeah.
Like, he's a talented actor.
He actually broke the set once. There's one outtake of him like jumping over a desk and like throwing a computer. And the computer like flies into a light switch and breaks the light switch. And like, they like, oh, we have to fully stop everything that we're doing and have an electrician come in here and fix this.
He's just went like, all Mary Catherine Oops. Gallagher on us.
All right, let's get the show on the road, shall we? We got a lot that we need to get to. Final Four coming up this weekend. We have got a lot of NBA talk. It was a great night in the NBA last night. Back-to-back nights.
It was.
If you want to talk about
games that matter, were good?
Yeah.
Weird.
I mean, that doesn't include the Blazers, but a lot of them did. The month of April, we are only in the fourth day, and they've only played 3 days worth of basketball in the month of April. Holy camoli.
All 3 days.
It has been
meaningful, impactful, great games.
And just crazy, stupid, great. I mean, you have the crazy and stupid with Ja Morant and Russell Westbrook. You have, and Luka, you have really good basketball, high leverage games. It's been really fun to see.
Warriors-Lakers going bonkers last night.
Yeah, that game was fun, and Kevin Harlan proved again why he is
so
the
good.
Best. He's the best to have on those big games. All right, where we got to start, though? In the Final Four, who's the bat guy? Danny and Dusty on the Fan.
Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
Final Four gets underway tomorrow down in San Antone.
Sweet baby Jesus, thank you. I hate the break between the Elite Eight and Final Four. I just want to keep it going.
Oh,
I
think you get a little build up, a little break. Tournament basketball is really hard, especially at this point. You know, these guys, I think for some teams,
they need the rest.
You want to keep pushing forward, but for the Final Four we have this year,
Jani Broome needs it.
You want that rest for these teams because we got 4-1 seeds in the tournament. Who's the bad guy in this tournament? Who do people not want to see win? Because I think ultimately it's Duke, but we've talked about this before. John Shire, Cooper Flagg, hell, even Con Knipple, which if Coach K was the coach of this team, we'd probably hate Con Knipple.
Yes.
And people would be making like, because Con Knipple is KK, it'd be like KK with Coach K. And be, we know where that would go. Yeah. And they'd just be like, everybody hates Duke, right?
Which is interesting. One of those, you get these in leading up to big matchups, whether it's the Final Four, Super Bowl, World Series. Like, who is the country rooting for? And I was shocked yesterday. The team that has the most public support on social media is Houston.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because they're still seen as this little engine that could. There's been enough time that has lapsed between Houston and Phi Slamma Jamma and being a basketball power to where it is now that I think people have forgot just how rich the tradition and history is of Houston basketball and how much they really care about it. And they're new to being in a power conference, too. Right? I mean, they were in the American just a couple of years ago, and now here they are as a member of the Big 12 in a Final Four, and it seems like this little engine that could story, but I mean,
it's hilarious. They have one of the top 10 recruits in the country heading to them next year. It's like, yeah, they're not that team, guys.
They went from 1992 to 2010 without an NCAA tournament appearance. From 1992 to 2017, they only had that one appearance in the NCAA tournament in 2010.
Just as an aside, Duke has the number one recruiting class in the country with the Boozer twins and a couple other guys heading to Duke. Houston has the number two class in the country. They have three of the top 25 players in the country joining them next year.
Wow.
Yeah. One of them is that top 10 guy I was talking about with Chris Senak. He was just in the McDonald's All-American game on Monday.
Yeah, it is a little wild, though, that this Houston is dubbed as, like, America's darling in this, despite the fact that they have been ranked in the top five in four of the last five seasons. And that one season that they weren't, the highest they reached was sixth in the country.
Yeah.
Kelvin Sampson is a hell of a basketball coach.
And a great recruiter.
And it's taken him, do you know how long he's been there?
I want to say, 12 years?
It's his 11th season there, right? It's his 11th season, and he's finally, like, built a consistent winner.
Yeah, the thing is, for him, this has been kind of a shift over the last couple of years of getting these better recruiting classes. Don't get me wrong, you always want to get the best players, but he has been loud and proud about, I don't care about your stars. We don't just go recruit stars. We recruit culture first, and then we see if you've got the, we want mentality over talent, but we're trying to get the most talented of that mentality. Yeah. And it's not every class that they recruit is going to have these guys. But basically, what they're trying to do is, like, if there's a top 25 every year, there's probably two or three guys in that top 25 that are nasty. Cooper Flagg is nasty. If he had gone to Houston, I'd be like, yeah, that's a hand and glove fit, baby. I can see that all day. But there's some years you may not get those guys. And so they go kind of more the Marquette path, the Tom Crean, like, chip on your shoulder, Dane Altman. Like, they have a style that they want to play. They want to put you in a chokehold, and they'd rather do that than recruit the stars. And so sometimes it's just not as flashy.
Yeah, I was reading a story a guy who used to, he actually used to work for the Oregonian for a little bit. Brian, you remember Brian Smith? Brian T. Smith?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote an article where he kind of talked about that idea of the players that they're attracting. He was talking to one of the assistants, Casey Beard, who's been with Sampson the entire time he's been at Houston, and talking about finding those guys in kind of the identity that you're building at Houston. And it's very odd that a team that has been a one seed the last three NCAA tournaments can still hold that chip on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Right?
Look, their recruiting class last year ranked 49th.
All right.
49th. That's the year before that, 22nd. The year before that, they are 44th. These are not the marks of Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, yep, and yet they have found themselves there year after year after year after year.
Yeah.
It's pretty damn impressive.
I still think that we do have Duke as the bad guy. I think that...
Bad guy in name only?
How do people feel about Florida and Auburn, though?
I would think that maybe they're looking at Auburn because of Bruce Pearl.
I love Auburn.
I do, too.
Yeah.
Well, is Florida's coach and his past enough of a big deal to skew some of that?
I just think people don't like Florida in general. Because there's a certain arrogance about the Florida Gators that permeates. I mean, and you just go, meh. Little bad taste in your mouth,
yeah,
kind of deal.
It's not quite like Duke arrogance, but yeah, it's there.
It's not even close. It's not even close to that. But Duke has softened, though. I think that that's the fun part about this Final Four, is that there are storylines for each team that you can pull for, and you can find a way to
like every team,
to get on board with them.
Yeah,
yeah, whether it is in Florida, the likable story of Florida is Walter Clayton Jr.,
yeah,
who, you know, he started at Iona. Is that right?
Yeah, because he transferred twice.
And he is a guy that, dude, he has popped, and he averaged 18 points a game on the season. He's averaging 23 in the tournament. Like, he has ramped up his game when it means the most, so, for Florida.
Your most outstanding player of the tournament, it's between Clayton, Broome, and Flag.
Yep.
Like, those are your three.
Dang, man. If we see Duke do what they've done to everybody else tomorrow against Houston.
If they beat Houston like they beat everybody else.
Everybody turns on them. Yeah. And everybody, no matter who wins that SEC one, mm-hmm, and it will be, we are going for the team from the SEC, Florida or Auburn.
Because if they become the Death Star.
Yeah.
If they go out there and handle Houston.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's,
I mean,
like, it's like this unstoppable force.
Yeah, like, oh, we can't have this.
Yeah. And again, that is a change in Duke, because every time Coach K had one of those teams, they lost.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, we talk about those great freshmen they've had over the years. This is the first one to deliver.
Yep. And he's delivering in spades. Cooper Flagg's been outstanding. Yeah. Named AP Player of the Year today, too. And that, we'll talk about that a little bit later. But he's lived up to all of the hype, and he's deserving, man.
He's got two games left to make that path for best one and done ever. It's on the table.
It is on the table.
Which is crazy to think. It's on the table.
I mean, Melo.
AD.
KD. AD.
Yeah. I think Flagg's passed KD.
Yeah.
I mean, what he's done on the team side. Like, don't be wrong. 26-11 from KD was insane.
Yeah.
But that Texas team wasn't that good.
But that's the thing. Kevin Durant made them relevant and made them good. Yeah. He didn't play alongside the guys that Cooper Flagg's playing with. That's for damn sure. Kevin Durant was a freak of nature.
God, can you imagine, though, if he had, again, had he stayed in college another year?
Mm.
KD and LaMarcus.
That would have been pretty good. I think that would have been all right for them.
Would have been a pretty good team.
They would have figured out a way to make things work there. All right, 503-864-6326. That is the Fan text line. We had some incredible finishes around the NBA last night. The Portland Trailblazers was not one of them. They did beat the Toronto Raptors. But the first 3 days of the month of April, if it is a sign of things to come, buckle up, because it's been a wild first 3 days of April as we head into, it's now the night of April 4th. Tonight it's going to get weird. Danny and Dusty, here's Rust with SportsCenter.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Ain't it good? Portland Trailblazers got another win last night, 112-103 in Toronto. That may be one of the wild things of the NBA, is that the Blazers just seemingly keep trying to win and do.
I mean, you weren't going to lose that game.
Yeah, boy, they tanked really hard. Yeah. And that's talking Trailblazers. The entirety of the NBA, though, is going a little nuts when you think about all of the things that have happened just in the month of April, and they've only played 3 days worth of games this month so far. We can go from the wild and weird, the whole Ja Morant finger gun gate that's happening right now, where he does the finger guns to the Golden State Warriors. He and Buddy Hield of Golden State get a warning that, hey, you guys better watch yourselves here. And literally the same day, Ja Morant last night hits a game winner against the Miami Heat, does the finger guns.
Yep.
Which, can we talk about that? He 100% fully extended his arm and pushed off.
Yes. I mean, it is.
Like, I mean, that was one of those ones where you're like, I know time and situation, but that one was pretty egregious. He goes into the land of the Giants. They go straight up, and he just goes, yank, step back. Great shot.
Look, when
game
you
winner.
When you weigh $170, you get away with some stuff because you get beat up most of the time. But the whole finger gun of it all, it's like,
yeah,
it's taken over kind of social media today, and the only people really defending Ja are Grizzlies fans. The rest of the world is saying, are you stupid?
I think he is.
Yeah, and it's very much, it is, because like it was like, the rules are different for Ja. Yes! Congratulations, you have cleared the first hurdle to mental capacity.
Well, I'll let you know this one, too. If you're on probation, rules are different for you, too.
Especially when you get the phone call 12 hours before. I saw somebody, I can't remember who it was on social media, just quantify this the best way. It's not that what Ja did is so egregious, or the finger guns are so egregious. It's that
it's not,
the people,
because in a vacuum,
totally
it's,
fine.
It's not an egregious
matter.
Celebration, but you have to have awareness of who you are and what you have done in your past.
It's like with Draymond Green. Every time he does something mildly out of pocket, it's going to be looked at harder because he was so out of pocket for so long.
Yeah.
Ja, you flash guns, dude. Do the ice in your veins. Do the DX chop. I don't care. Do literally give the bird to the bench. I don't care. It is perception. They have told you, don't do this thing, dummy.
Yeah.
And you went and did it 12 hours later. I was like, what's the big deal? Anybody else is doing it?
Yeah.
It's the one thing you were asked not to do. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
Just don't. I don't understand
it. Shams Charania has reported that Ja Morant had a call with Adam Silver.
Yes.
They talked. And
don't. And
that night. Finger guns.
Right to it. And like, again, the post that I was referencing, it was like, it's not, the people aren't tired or worried about the finger guns.
You stupid or something.
People at the NBA's head office are sick and tired of getting meeting invites at 1 o'clock in the morning for an 8 o'clock invite to deal with this idiot over the same thing.
Yeah. Well,
that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's any boss anywhere.
Yeah.
If you have to deal with the same idiot making the same mistakes over and over and over again, guess what you're going to do?
Yeah.
You're going to get tired of it. And you're going to go, you know what, dude, we're done with you.
Yep.
And they're done with him is finding and suspending him.
Yeah. In addition to that wildness, if you look at the Western Conference standings right now, the difference between the 3 seed and the 6 seed in the final stretch of the season with 5 to 6 games to play is only 2 games separating. Yep. Actually, it's 5 and 7 right now. Mm-hmm. Or 3 and 7, I should say. Golly, number's hard. So the Denver Nuggets, if they hit the skids and they've lost 2 in a row, they could go from hosting as the 3 seed to the play-in game. Which is wild.
It's so crazy. And again, it's actually 3 through 8 because the Clippers are a half game back. If the Clippers win tonight, yeah, they'll be tied in that same group.
It
is insanely tight. And this is what I was talking about with like the games across the conference and why it's going to be like, everyone's like, oh, you know, the Blazers, maybe they could sneak into the play. And the Warriors and Lakers might be resting the last 2 games of the season. I'd be stunned if they were.
Yeah.
Because seeding is so tight.
They're fighting.
They're fighting for
matchups.
They're
grinding. And last night's result of the Warriors and the Lakers. What a game. And Kevin Harlan was on his A game during that.
Approaching 2 to go. Warriors by 7. Green sets a screen. Curry 3. Good. What a big hit. Here comes Reeves. He'll fake a 3. Hachimura gets off to LeBron. Green is right there. Here's a 3. LeBron.
Dude, it was big shot after big shot going back and forth as the Warriors ended up pulling out a win last night in LA, which pulled them within a game of the Lakers, okay, in the Western Conference standings, 123-116. But coming out of that, it's not just you had these back and forths where Curry, LeBron, Reeves are all making big shots left and right. It's the fact Luka Doncic could not hit the broadside of a barn.
First game in, was it 5 years, 6 years? He hasn't hit a 3?
Well, it was since 2023, but it was a 114-game span since he last failed to make a 3-point shot. He's gone 114 games, making at least 1 3. He went 0-for-6. It was the 5th longest streak in NBA history that Luka had, and he could not make a shot down the stretch. But what kind of amplified his poor performance and got a little bit of consternation with Laker fans is that
he got cooked.
He went down into the middle to try to take over. If you're not hitting from deep, right, be Luka. He tries to go up late in the game with like 23 seconds to go. Draymond strips him, and now we're going to see Draymond Defensive Player of the Year. He came up with 3 massive defensive stops on TNT. That push is going to be there for
there publicly. Marcus Thompson, who's the kind of face of media for the Bay, he's been covering that team for a long time, back before they were good, and so he kind of gets the cachet nod of the hey, can you start this narrative for us? Again, Draymond is the favorite in the betting books. Everybody that I talk to that covers the league, the people who actually vote on this stuff, he's going to be a consideration for all defensive team. I have not talked to a single media member, a single voting media member that has Draymond Green as defensive player of the year. Not one.
They're going to try to make it a thing.
I don't think he's even going to get a vote.
Oh, really?
I do feel like it's going to be spread out. You're not going to have a runaway defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
It's going to be close. But
if he has any more games like he had last night down this stretch, he may be in that conversation because
it's defensive player of the year, not defensive player of the quarter year.
Yeah, I know, but recency bias and the fact that there's no standout, it's what can you do for me now in the last impression.
Voters are not good on this stuff, especially the folks that actually don't watch the rest of the league.
Yeah, but last night we also had an individually historic performance. Giannis,
oh my God,
went for 35 points, 17 rebounds, and 20 assists.
20 assists is such a crazy number.
For a man of his size?
For anyone.
But Giannis is a freak of nature, and he needs to be piggybacking this team, and he has absolutely done that. But he goes 35, 17, and 20 in the Bucks because no Dame. Dame's got blood clots. He's not going to be playing.
They don't have Middleton anymore. Kuzma's turned into a pumpkin. Brooke Lopez is being relied on a ton, and he was good last. Here's the crazy thing.
It took
about
everything they had to beat the
Sixers,
who are bottoming out.
Giannis had 20 assists and only 2 turnovers. He spent that much time on the ball and did not turn the ball over. What's even more insane, he's 10 of 11 from the line and 12 of 19 from the field.
So you had that.
Good Lord.
You had that last night to Jokic's 61, 10, and 10 triple double.
Yes, in a game that they lost in the last second.
Steph's 50-point near five steal with 10 made threes performance.
He had 10 rebounds, 8 assists. He was just short of triple-double.
And then in that Jokic triple-double, Westbrook absolutely blows a game and turns a win into a loss.
Smoked
with a layup
and
layup.
A fouled three.
All of everything that we just talked about has happened in 3 days in the month of April.
And Edwards went nuts in that fourth quarter of that Timberwolves win. Like, no, I mean, the basketball is basketballing very hard. And this is my big argument. Make games matter across the board. Now, look, you're not going to get every single game, but my God, half the league can't not matter in a given night.
Yeah.
It just can't, man.
Yeah.
When you have like 8 legitimate, like, teams that don't want to win, that's 16 teams.
Mm-hmm.
If those 8 are playing non-taking teams, that's more than half the league off the table.
That's crazy.
On a given night.
Yeah.
It's nasty.
One last thing on that Lakers-Warriors game. LeBron went for 33, 5, and 9.
Mm-hmm.
Steph went for 37, 6 assists with 4 threes made. Those two combined for 70 points in the game. Their combined age, 77.
Yeah. Crazy.
The old dude's cooking.
Still got it.
Let's go.
It's just better training and nutrition.
That's right.
That's all it is.
Chef Curry. That's his nickname.
Yep.
That's what he
does. Just eating better.
That's
Pay no attention to the fact that how he looked when he came into the league versus how he looks now.
I will not do that.
No.
All right. Something popped up on my timeline. I think it's worth a listen.
Mm.
An Oregon early enrollee, DeCorian Moore, 5-star wide receiver, number 1 wide receiver in the country. He got an invite to Ryan Clark's Pivot podcast, and what he had to say was pretty impressive for a kid who should still be in high school. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. All right, Oregon has early enrollee DeCorian Moore. He's on campus practicing with the Ducks, and it's popped up on my timeline last night, and I found it really interesting. He went on the Pivot podcast, Ryan Clark's podcast.
Yeah, there's been some good stuff come out of that.
Yeah, and I thought, this was a really interesting question Ryan Clark asked him. And because a 5-star kid who is the number 1 wide receiver in the country, a lot of expectations heaped upon him, and kind of handling that and what it looks like for him at the University of Oregon.
Everybody expects you to play. You were recruited because you're the best wide receiver in the country, but what happens if the playing time isn't exactly what you want? What happens if the fit isn't the fit you want? Do you want to try to see everything through at that one school? Or will you use the sort of tools that are given to you to find the best place for you?
Obviously, me coming to a school, I felt like, you know, I'm going to have the opportunity to play. That was regardless of, you know, whatever school I chose. Just me having the talent that I have, you know, the work ethic that I have, coming in and be able to work hard and just, like, put my name out there, you know, just go in and make plays like I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't get the playing time that I think I deserve or whatever, it's not really going to, like, do anything, you know, to me mentally, you know, because I'm a freshman coming in. I would be behind guys that, you know, have obviously been there, you know, learned the system, been with the quarterbacks. Because, you know, we have Dante Moore. You know, he's been under the system already. Just, like, making sure he's comfortable at all times and stuff like that. You know, you got to do what's best for the quarterback. So it's not really, you know, much to that.
You are built to do this, by the way.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
That's
pretty impressive.
For a kid, high school senior, 5-star kid.
Even if you take it with the glass, the most empty, the most cynical approach of, like, he's saying a canned answer, it's a really good canned answer. Like, there's thought into it. And again, I'm not saying that's what I believe. I actually believe
that's totally a fair thing if you want to say it's a canned answer. But then you go back to something that Dan Lanning repeats all the time about the recruiting process, and especially when guys just say, oh, they just throw the bag at a guy. In the landscape of NIL, yes, that happens, and it happens all the time. But one thing that he always says is that in the recruiting process, at the top of their evaluation is, do they love football?
Mm-hmm.
Do they love football, and are they committed to getting better, right? And I was talking with some guys I went on like a New York Giants draft show,
mm-hmm.
And that was kind of like the reoccurring thing where they kept asking about guys like Jeffrey Bossa, like Josh Connerly, Derek Harmon, you know, Dylan Gabriel, Tess Johnson. That's kind of like the common thread that you keep pulling, is that dude just loves football. And you hear DeCorian Moore as an incoming freshman understanding, like, yeah, I'm going to be playing with some grown-ass men who've been here for a few years. They know the system. They know the quarterbacks. They know everything. My whole thing as a wide receiver is I came in, I want to compete, and I got to make the quarterback feel the most comfortable as he possibly can.
There was a very, very heady, let the chips fall where they may, but I'm going to have something to do with those chips.
Yeah.
And but there was a, I'm not ceding control, but I know the deal.
If I'm a Duck fan, I love hearing that answer.
Hell's
from
a football fan. I hadn't heard that before you played it. And that's, again, even if I was taking it with the most cynical approach,
right,
I come out of that with a pretty favorable impression of DeCorian Moore.
Yeah, that was impressive. And we haven't heard him speak a lot, obviously. Just been on campus for a couple of months or a couple of weeks down in Eugene. But you go, all right, that's kind of that mentality, that always compete, want to compete, and we'll just see where it's at the end of the day. Have a feeling he's going to be playing a lot.
You know what? That we talk about all the negatives of youth development now. That right there is to me a showcase for the positive.
Right.
That's preparing young men to be ready for the next level better. Because if you had asked a top wide receiver recruit 10, 15 years, I mean, Keyshawn Johnson at USC. I mean,
we talk about it all the time here, but Andrew Wiggins came for Nike Hoop Summit 1 year, and Isaac was pumped to interview him because he was number one recruit in the country, was going to Kansas. It was an interview that has never been aired on this station.
Yeah, because there's nothing behind it.
He was woefully ill-prepared to do it. And that is the difference even from when Andrew Wiggins was in high school to where we are now.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at a guy like Scoot.
Training, man.
Just like the readiness for the non-court, non-field stuff.
Yep. Well, a lot of guys are getting ready for something else, and it's a mad dash. Boy, the wild, wild west is turning into the OK Corral this weekend. Danny and Dusty on The Fan.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.